This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gipps, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
Here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, Brendan and David with you. Now, we're into our next interview already.
We are, Brendan.
We're keeping things theatrical, David.
Oh, are we? That's funny about that, because yes. It is an arts program. which I see where you're going, because it's not visual arts today. Actually, we've no visual arts today,
no.
Which is a bit of a rarity. We've got Tina and Erin. Hello and welcome.
Welcome.
Hello.
So tell us, what is this? Erin, you actually, you know, like, it's your concept. Is that right?
Well, it's both of our concepts. Well, it's the Bible's concept.
the Bible, that little old thing called the Bible.
Adina and I have worked on a couple of shows with young people in the past, and this is the third in our kind of trilogy of those works. So we've been talking about it for quite a long time. And the past two shows have been working with a cast of teenagers, and this time we wanted to work with a cast of children.
Right. Why teenagers? Why now children?
Well, I think it really relates to the kind of source material we've been working with. So the first two shows were based on works about young women, or we sort of perceive them as being about groups of young women. And when we think about the story of the book of Exodus, we've really sort of highlighted this idea of the children of Israel and taken that idea very literally. Like, what if they were actual children? What would that mean for the story? And what does it mean for the sort of foundational story of violence?
Yeah. Now, what we like to, before we get really stuck into the show, we like to do a bit of a background. So, Erin, what's your background?
I've done lots of performing in independent theatre, and then for the last few years I've been doing a bit more dramaturgy, creating, co-directing sort of stuff, so moving out of the sort of stage and back into the audience.
Right. Well, not the audience, you're creating what the audience sees.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I've sort of, so I try and do a bit of both, but that's sort of my general trajectory.
Right. And why did you make that move?
I think I just, when I was doing performing, I was always interested in how the work got shaped on a bigger level, and I was always trying to kind of enforce that a little bit from my actor's corner, and then realized it might be more effective. But also, Adina and I first worked together in a show that Adina directed and I was acting in, and there are a bunch of different directors sort of similar to you, Adina, who work in a very collaborative way with the performers, so it was a pretty organic kind of transformation from one to the other.
Adina, your backstory?
I've never been on the stage, so it's a little bit different.
Which is a rarity these days, because we're finding more and more the directors that we speak to have actually started out. And Erin's nodding at this as well. Would you agree, Erin, that a lot of directors have actually come out of being actors?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't,
I mean, it's probably wise to have had that experience. I haven't really acted since high school, and you know, much like what you were talking about before, probably this is a point at which you go, no, I'm definitely not a performer, but I've been directing, I suppose, for quite a long time. And I started a company called Fraud Outfit, which this production is with, in 2010. And we've been making works for about 7 years. And this is the fifth, I think. And also, have worked as a director in companies like Malthouse and Belvoir in Sydney. And so, yes, I'm very much a director. And also, I create my own work, in a collaborative environment. Erin and I have created a few works together, and with a whole kind of cohort of designers as well, and direct some texts as well.
And with Fraught, you know, you sort of push the envelope and trying to take theatre into different places. You know, is that something that started a long time ago, you know, challenging the norms of what theatre can be?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think over the years, you know, with every show, you come to understand what your interests and your tastes are. And also, as you gain more skills, you can push the envelope further and further in a way, because you sort of know, you know, what those sort of limitations are. So, yeah, it was always the intention, probably not as conscious at first. And as the years have gone on, kind of think, well, why not? Really?
And has it been easier or more difficult as you've gone on, you know, the actual industry itself to take risks, basically?
I think it's sort of, it's not necessarily easier or harder. I think I've just, you know, as an adult, I care less and less about sort of pleasing people, I suppose. And so you start to become much, it's easier to become more unapologetic about the work, because that changes. Whereas maybe when I was younger, I was more sort of nervous about what people thought. You know.
Which is all part of growing
and
up, I suppose.
What we were talking about at the start of the show as well, in terms of theatre criticism. You know, putting your work out there and having someone potentially just rip it apart.
Yeah, as a critic, you know, like, it's an interesting
scary
topic. Yeah, like, just on that, do you, you know, like, how upset do you get if you get a bad review for...
Oh, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't get upset, but I think you sort of, I don't know, I've found that I've gotten, you know, a whole wide range of reviews over the years for various things, and I don't know, I've just tried to sort of see it from a bit of an objective perspective and see it as part of a much larger system of politics and criticism.
Yeah.
and try to not take it too personally, otherwise you could never make the next thing.
True.
You know?
And when you've had a bad review, can you sometimes, but I'm sure it's only ever happened once.
Sure.
Do you sort of take it on board, or do you strongly disagree with what that reviewer has said?
I think it depends what it is. I think when I'm very interested in the sort of the politics of reviewing, and I think I take those things on board, or I try to understand how the work is being read by people who maybe don't think like I do. I mean, everybody thinks that's interesting.
And of course they don't, and that's the big problem, isn't it? Is that it's too much of a personal opinion instead of looking at a broader picture of what they're seeing.
Sort of wider picture. I mean, you know, when you make a piece of work, particularly the kind of work that we make, which is very open, every audience member will have a very different response.
Yep.
And so we are opening ourselves up to that. But I think in terms of criticism, I guess you hope that the critic will look at it within the spirit that it was made and try to understand what it's been made for. And so even if it's not a good review, if they do that, then it's really interesting. If it's just about trying to help you make better theatre according to their opinion, then it's not very interesting.
So, Aaron, you know, like, you've worked together with Adina a bit. You know, like, is it important with a topic like this, because it's not your average sort of a topic that you would go into theatre with, is it?
Yeah, you mean, is it important to kind of have that collaboration?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all of, like, in a way, these sort of three big works that we've done together have really been part of a conversation between us and the designers, and then with the performers as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's critical that you're constantly in dialogue, and that you're sort of, on the one hand, that you're speaking the same language, and on the other hand, that you're kind of challenging each other's ideas. And yeah, particularly, like you say, when it's kind of working with a really foundational text like this, everyone kind of comes to that with a lot of presuppositions, and we come to so we sort of spend a long time kind of researching and debating an actual kind of interpretation of the text, and then try and funnel all of those complexities into a one-hour show.
We're going to be talking about how you get that balance right in Book of Exodus, Parts 1 and 2, at Theatre Works in St Kilda. You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy.
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine. Brendan and David with you. And we're here till 5 p.m. We might let Robert come on and play some nice
today?
Music.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
We'll let him in. But we're talking with Adina and Aaron from their shows at Theatre Works in St Kilda, which we're big fans of here.
Around the corner from my place.
Very close to David's place. But the show is called Book of Exodus. Well, there's parts 1 and 2. So we're starting with part 1, I'm assuming.
Yes.
That was a question.
Yeah.
Facetious question, but question all the same. So tell us a little bit. We sort of finished up talking, or we started getting into what Book of Exodus really entails. So, you know, people walking through the doors, what can they expect from the show?
They definitely can't expect a kind of full telling of the entire story of the Book of Exodus, because that would probably be a show that would go for weeks. But we've really sort of taken this biblical text and kind of spent a long time drawing out some of the, you know, really deep images and ideas that lie underneath the story.
Can I ask a question right there? Why this book?
Yeah, definitely. We've spoken about it in a few ways, but one is that the past two works have really dealt with young people on stage and how they relate to a kind of God-like presence, whether that's an absent God or a God that's coming through their bodies, or a God that's sort of sitting in the position of the audience. This particular text always felt like it was underlying those other works, because it really is a foundational story about a God's relationship to a community of people. And it kind of felt like it was time to just go straight to the source.
And what does it mean, Adina, for modern audiences? You know, what's your way in to, I guess, translate might be the right word for a modern audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of our works are contemporary in their set of ideas and the way that they communicate to an audience. I think the work is structured as a series of impressions or images, and I think each image in and of itself is drawn from the source of the ancient text, but has a very contemporary feeling to it and a set of associations.
Is there any parallels, I could be drawing a long bow here, but any parallels between adapting, say, something like Shakespeare and works from the Bible? You know, that kind of expectation, that weight of expectation that's around a classic text like that.
I mean, I think what's really helpful about that, and I've done that a number of times, most recently, you know, we looked at The Back Eye, and then before that I did production of Wizard of Oz. And what's great about Wizard of Oz, for example, is you can put red shoes on stage and everybody knows what that is. And Shakespeare and the Bible are, you know, probably less known than The Wizard of Oz, I would say, to most people. But it has a similar idea where you can interpret an idea like the burning bush, which is evocative and archetypal, but then we can translate that into something which is about power or about the transmission of history or, you know, memory or violence in a kind of, you know, new way.
So why children? Aaron, did you write or did you come up with the concept together? Or Adina, did you go off and say, I'm going to do it with children this time around?
I think with this production, it's very hard to trace back the steps of where production began. I think many years ago I'd had the idea of wanting to look at the Book of Exodus, and then over the years where we've been working with young people, we started to think, actually, the Book of Exodus should be made with children for the reason I was talking about before in terms of the metaphor of this community. And so I think that's really where it came from. And I think for us, one of the ideas, the kind of key images is about the children of Israel waiting in the desert to receive the law, and the image of an actual mass of children just waiting for the law and building the golden calf felt really interesting to us at this current moment.
And especially because a child's mind isn't as developed, or they don't have the understanding. You know, like, and with the kids of today, because of social media, it depends on their age, of course, but because of, their iPads, their life, you know, like, I have four nieces and nephews that I babysit, and and the 4-year-old is on it. Although you sit next to her and watch the stuff that she watches, and I go, oh my God, I don't understand it at all, because it's so childlike. But how is their perception of something so strong and so powerful? You were talking about the burning bush, for instance. Do you have to do a lot of explaining with them? Why are you? That's something that's come up.
Yes. Oh no. Of course. It's a massive question. It's just sort of like where do you begin? Yes and no. I mean, I think what feels really interesting about working with children is we make a whole lot of assumptions that that they can't understand complex adult material. And very often they can, and they can shed light on it in a really interesting and new way, which is kind of part of the premise of the work and part of the angle of the work. And at the same time, you know, our works are dark and they are challenging. And so we do need to find ways to translate those ideas into a mode that a child can absorb and understand and make their own. And that's never about trying to translate it to their actual experience. We don't make shows with characters. It's not really about them, but it's about finding ways that they can, connect with it.
And logistics-wise, working with kids as well, you know, how do you kind of work around their schedules? You know,
what age, just so we know?
This cast is 8 to 12.
Oh, gee, it's pretty young then.
Yeah.
So how do you work around that? How do you kind of have enough time with them in rehearsals?
Do we have enough time?
We don't have enough. We just wish, we keep on joking that we want to, you know, go and just, you know, Ferris Bueller them out of school and bring them to rehearsal. It is really challenging. I mean, what is really good in devising a new work is that we do have space in between rehearsals. So usually you'd work full time every day with adults. And that is genuinely really challenging when you don't have a script to come back the next day and try to come up with the next idea. Whereas we have to work with them after school and the weekend. So we have a lot of time, which is great. But we work over a number of months and we work in bits and pieces.
Okay, so it'd be longer than what you would do with adults. And how important is the role of the parents with that, and especially a text like this as well?
It's really important. And the parents are quite involved in the process. And obviously, you know, just as the audience will and just as the kids themselves will, the parents will have their own kind of assumptions or ideas about the text. They might never have heard of the text. You know, they'll have their own kind of cultural background and history that they're bringing to it. But I think it's just what we've learned is it's really just about keeping them in the loop with what's happening in the rehearsal room.
Because they would probably help you guys out by taking home and discussing it and going through it with their child, wouldn't they?
Well, I mean, some do. Often we find that the kids don't tell their parents very much and they want to keep it a secret until the final moment. So,
right, okay.
So we need to keep them in the loop.
Yeah, well, because, like it is a hard topic, this one, I think. And I think the understanding of the child being involved in this is it's a wonderful challenge. I think it's fantastic, and it will be really a good as an audience from an audience point of view to see how they portray it.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, and I think something that I've found really interesting is that the kind of fundamental questions of this work are childlike in some ways. Like they're questions of why is violence and, you know, necessary? You know, why does one group need to be punished while the other group is saved? You know, they're actually kind of innocent questions in a way, which as adults we sort of accept as part of that's just what happens. But through a child's perspective, we kind of see them anew and they become more shocking.
Yeah. And it's set in two parts. And there's a break. Are you using the same kids in this part two?
No, the first show has two performers in it and the second show has a mass of children.
Right.
We're saying it has 40 kids, but we're not entirely sure yet. And both works kind of look at different, look at the Exodus from different angles, but they're also about the micro and the macro. So part one is a much more intimate work and part two is a more large scale work. Although part one actually is quite large scale in some ways too.
But with only two
kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where did you find them?
We just had a bunch of auditions. Some of the kids we auditioned were actually relatives of, like, younger sisters or brothers of other performers.
Oh, okay.
Some of them had been in the same kind of drama groups and that sort of thing. Some was through school teachers that we knew. Basically, anyone who worked with kids in any capacity, we were kind of putting the call out to kids and their parents who would be interested.
Because that age, you know, like a lot of kids really haven't worked out what they want to do, whether they want to be actors or what. Although you do hear some adults say, I knew when I was 4 or 5 years old that I wanted to be an actor. So it would be a great challenge for you.
Well, actually, the kind of performers who are more interested in is not the ones who are like brilliant little actors or dancers or super technically skilled, but with the way that we work, it was sort of more important that they were really open to trying different things and comfortable being watched and willing to kind of try a bunch of different weird activities that we do with them.
Wow, awesome. So it's at Theatre Works. So part one starts when?
31st of May.
Yeah, to the 18th of June. How many nights a week is it playing?
It's playing five nights a week, so there's 15 performances.
Right, okay. Yeah. That's a big ask for kids too, isn't it?
It is a long season. We've got two different casts, so they alternate night to night. So I think one cast does three shows a week and the other does two. So in the end, it's not too bad.
And then part two starts on 18th of October and runs to the 29th of October. As I said, it's down at Theatre Works in St Kilda on Ackland Street. And bookings, obviously, through the theatre or?
Yeah, all the bookings are through the Theatre Works website.
Right. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And, you haven't picked something that's simple to do, have you?
No,
what do you say? Yeah. We haven't had much sleep. Yeah. Stressing to the max. So congratulations on just doing what you're doing.
Cool.
Thanks so much. Thanks.
You're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.